91.3 KXCI Tucson. Real people, real radio.
Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us today on our community radio station, 91.3 KXCI. This is Aspen Green with my co-host, Kathy Harris, and we're bringing you Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. And you can hear more of our programs by going to kxci.org and looking on our Broad Perspectives Radio page. This is the last reminder we can do, so please, if you haven't voted, please make sure you vote. Participating in elections is one of the key freedoms of American life. So no matter what you believe or who you support, it is very important to exercise your rights. So make sure you vote. And now, I'm excited to talk with our guest today, Sandra Butler, Sandy, a local author. Her new book, Leaving Home at 83, portrays the challenges of starting anew in Tucson. She is funny and honest and talks about what's to come next. So, Kathy, let's talk to Sandy and find out what's to come next.
Well, I am very excited also to talk to Sandy because I am such an admirer of her books. 86-year-old author Sandra Butler was raised in a conventional 1940s suburb to become a wife and a mother. She spent 7 years being unsuccessful at being a proper wife, but was delighted with being a mother. After a divorce, she and her two young daughters entered the 1960s and became immersed in the anti-war and civil rights movements. She found her political and psychological foundation in the second wave of the women's liberation movement of the 1970s. She began college in her mid-30s, which led to graduate study, 5 books, 2 films, and decades of organizing and community building. Her new book release, Leaving Home at 83, chronicles Sandy's struggles to balance her autonomy and independence with a growing longing to be taken care of, something she disapproves of in herself and has fought against all her life. Sandy also served on the founding editorial board of Persimmon Tree, an online magazine of the arts by women over 60, creating a much-needed resource for older women writers. Sandy, welcome to our show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you, and we want to talk about your new book, but first, let's talk a little bit more about you. You are now 86 years old, and no one would know that by looking at you, I'd like to say, and you moved to Arizona at age 83 from the San Francisco Bay Area to be closer to your daughters, but you had a long history of political and social activism in California. Can you tell us a little about what kinds of issues have motivated you to being an activist over all these years?
I think I would say that as a young mother in New York, I became involved politically through what was then called the old left, which became the new left and was focused on Vietnam War and civil rights movement. But what it meant was that the women were in the kitchen making the brown rice casseroles to serve after the meeting was over while the men were in the living room with their agendas and their conclusions and their arguments. We were never part of the decision-making. We were part of the infrastructure to keep the men moving forward to do their political work. And the most important part of that is that we never noticed. And when I was in my late 20s, after a very disappointing love affair, my eldest daughter, who was a brand new teenager, came home one day and said she had seen a sign in the library that said Women's Liberation was having a meeting about something called consciousness raising. And she suggested that I go in order to make some friends because she knew I was feeling very melancholy about the breakup. And I went to this first meeting and began a process of consciousness raising where I understood so profoundly that everything I had been taught about how to be a proper woman was a lie. Everything from top to bottom, which meant the very hard work of unlearning and then reconstructing, as I did with tens of thousands of other women, how I wanted to inhabit my body, my mind, my dreams, my longings, my energy, my finances, my own self, that was also connected to a collective vision of changing the world. We didn't think small in the early 70s. We were changing everything. And I was swept into that movement and into that kind of marvelous balance of the self and the collective and how they had to fit together as we move forward and created institutions, the first rape crisis centers, the first battered women's shelters, the first women's health centers, publishing companies, everything. It was all brand new. It was all exhilarating, and it swept tens of thousands of us all the way through the 1970s. And I was part of that sweep.
I was very interested to read that your daughters at a very young age, like early grade school, they were involved in your activism with you, including protesting the Vietnam War and joining in marches. I'm wondering, how do they remember those days? And are they still activists themselves?
They remember those days very well because they were very dramatic. My eldest daughter remembers at 7 giving out Vietnam moratorium buttons in Washington Square Park. What has emerged in the lives of both of my daughters is that they became teachers. They have done and continue to do their politics in the classroom, which is a very particular way to do politics, to invite voices that are not part of the conversation forward, to contextualize the subject matter in a larger political framework. So they're not, as I was when they were growing up, women who are in the streets. They are women who absorbed all those lessons, translated them into a language that made sense for them, and have used it for generations of students in the classroom.
I never had children. I was saying to Aspen before the show, God, our kids were so young when they were involved in this. And Aspen said, well, I took my kids too. We all took our kids. Yeah. And I guess, especially for single mothers, of course, if you're going to go marching, you're going to have to take your kids.
That's exactly right.
It sounds like your kids really were into it. I mean, they were enjoying it.
Yes and no. I mean, it was exhilarating. They were proud. They were scared. But they didn't want to tell me they were scared because they wanted me to be proud of them. So, you know, psychologically, there's definitely developmental complexities that we had to talk about over the years, because I wasn't thinking about what it was for them other than the exhilaration of riding on my shoulders and all that. So, yeah, it's complicated, but they absorb the values and the lessons that I felt I was there to teach them. They translated it into a way that's authentic for them. So it worked.
You know, I also found myself reading about your life. I was really envying all your close groups of women friends that you've had over the years. One of them in particular was a group that started meeting, I think you said around, they were in their 50s, and you were having yearly retreats to talk about the experiences of growing older. It sounds like women have always been a great support for you. What would you say you got from those groups? And do you still have close women friends and support groups?
Oh, sure. I think probably the best way to talk about that is that in the very early, early days of feminism in the 70s, one of the many slogans was sisterhood is powerful. None of us really had any idea how to be sisters to one another. We had to learn what it meant to organize and to work with people so different than we were, with different values, different life experiences, different cultural ways of doing things. The process by which we learned how to be sisterly and what it meant was probably the most important thing that I took away from those early years. And then when a group of friends were just coming up to 50 and just coming up to menopause, at a dinner party, one of the women said, we need another consciousness-raising group to talk about menopause and the way it's been politicized and the way it's been medicalized and the way we've internalized it. And we have another piece of work to do here. And we all agreed that was a wonderful idea. And each one of us at that dinner party invited three of her friends from her world, so that it was a mix of women, that some of whom we knew well, some of whom we didn't. And we called ourselves the Wandering Menstruals. We began to meet on the first Saturday morning of the month. And 34 years later, we're still meeting on the first Saturday morning of the month. We became chosen family. We became sisters. We learned about a kind of intimacy that sustains over time. There were weddings, there were funerals, there was births of children, there were bar mitzvahs and graduations of children, there were breakups, there were new love affairs. We accompanied one another all the way through all of that. And as we all began to approach 60, we said to one another, we have such a good thing going. Let's keep doing this. So we kept doing this. We've had deaths, of course, and it's a smaller number of us, but it's a kind of profound and deep knowing. And from my point of view of being known, these women know me and have witnessed my life and my unfolding for 35 years. And it is psychologically and emotionally the place where I come to rest.
That really sounds wonderful. And I'm so glad to hear that you're still meeting. That's fabulous. We want to start talking about your book, but before that, I think it's time for a music break. What do you think, Aspen?
I love music breaks, so of course it's time for a music break. And Sandy, you've picked the song, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free by Nina Simone. So you want to tell us why you chose that song for today's show?
Sure. In the late 1970s in San Francisco, we had a small, what we called People's Radio Station, KPOO, and I had a show called SOS, Sounds of Sisters. And that was my theme song.
I love that. Sounds of Sisters. That's great. Well, I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free is a jazz piece written by American musician Billy Taylor. And he was a civil rights campaigner and house pianist at Birdland Jazz Club. Simone recorded her version in 1967 on her Silk and Soul album, and the song became an anthem for the American civil rights movement in the 1960s. Simone's performance of the song at the 1965 Selma to Montgomery March helped raise awareness of the plight of Black Americans. As a prominent activist artist, Nina Simone's passionate delivery of the song continues to inspire and motivate listeners to fight for change, and it's just as relevant in today's political climate. So let's listen to I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free by Nina Simone off her Silk and Soul album. 91.3 KXCI Tucson. You're listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, and we're returning to our interview with Sandy Butler.
We want to talk about your new book. This is your fifth book. Yeah. Your first one was about sexual abuse and incest. The second one was called Cancer and Two Voices, which is about your experiences with Barbara and going through her breast cancer and her death. And that book won the Lambda Lesbian Literary Award in 1991. Then after that, you wrote The Kitchen is Closed and Other Benefits of Being Old, which is a kind of about what it says it is. And now you're releasing Leaving Home at 83. I'd love to talk about all of these books, but in the interest of time, let's get to your new one, Leaving Home at 83, which I found to be just delightful. Tell us in your words, what is this one about?
You didn't mention the third book, which was It Never Ends, Mothering Middle-Aged Daughters. I mentioned it because those first three books were me writing to talk about a subject matter that I felt was important for us as women to engage and think about. And with each of my books, I wrote them and then I went out and traveled around to talk to women about them. And my voice in all three of those books was kind of solemn and earnest and teachy, because that was the intention of those books. During COVID, when I wrote The Kitchen is Closed, I was able to be more playful in my voice, find a little bit more wryness in my voice. And it was really a pleasure to write it. Leaving home at 83 was more demanding because I needed to reveal vulnerabilities and choices and mistakes and fears and insecurities that I was experiencing as a result of choosing to leave home, being in a new place where I didn't have the autonomy I was used to. I didn't have any friends yet. The culture was unfamiliar to me. And I moved because I told myself a story that a lot of old women tell themselves, which is, I don't want to be a burden. But usually when old women tell themselves that story, they dig their heels in and stay in the home or in the environment they're already in, which ends up being more of a burden for their children, who have to fly across the country every time they get bronchitis or they can't get up the stairs or whatever. The story I told myself was, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to, in the name of being a good mother, leave my home of 50 years and my world of 50 years to be near them so that I'm not a burden. And that story was enough initially to catapult me out of my life. What took me months to allow to surface was that I was scared. I was vulnerable. I wanted to be near the feeling of safety of being near my daughters. And that was all new and unfamiliar sets of feelings. And I didn't know how to balance them with a life of being fully autonomous. It was a whole new psychological set of challenges. How much of myself can I hold on to as I move towards the end of my life, as my body or my mind becomes more fragile and vulnerable? How much space is there in my kids or my chosen family, for women who don't have children, and my chosen family's life? It's a very, very precarious balancing act that I think as old women, we need to take seriously and consider and think about. And I wanted to put my experience in a memoir form forward as a template for women to read, make their own autobiographical translations, have the conversations they need to have with themselves, and then eventually have those conversations with their kids or their chosen people.
I have to ask, in reading your book, it really read kind of like a novel. I mean, this was your life, but it's a memoir. And there were so many interesting little stories, to the point I felt like I need to ask you, the name of the place that you went to was Desert Manor in Phoenix. Is that the real name of the place?
No.
Okay.
Nor are any of the characters the same names, but all the rest is absolutely as it was.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. Some of the stories were so interesting. I was really kind of amazed when you first moved into the apartment. You had this beautiful patio that you were looking forward to sitting on, but it wasn't even usable. Tell us why that was.
I didn't have any way to be outside in the apartment I lived in for 25 years. I'd go in the elevator to go downstairs to be in the air. And so to me, it was just a marvelous treat to think I could just open a balcony door and be outside and have my coffee there and watch the sun go up and down. But the pigeons got there first. The pigeons had made it their home and they lived there, they molted there, and it was their place. The balcony was like the metaphor of, this may not be what I imagined it was to be.
Yes, on day one.
On day one, yeah.
Okay, and you had many other stories, but just one other one. One of the most telling ones to me was the dinner table arrangements. Tell us how that works.
I'll preface it by reminding listeners that The prior book was The Kitchen Was Closed, which talked about how I hate running a kitchen. I hate cooking. I'd much rather read a book. I'd much rather have a conversation than prepare a whole meal. And so this was the very first night. It said in the big book of rules that they gave me when I moved in, dinner was from 4:30 to 6:30. And so I went downstairs at 6 o'clock, which seemed like a reasonable time, and was turned away from the dining room, because what it really meant was you could stay in the dining room until 6:30, but serving ended at 5:45. And I was turned away from having the first meal where I was going to be both physically and psychologically fed in my new life, and sent upstairs with a styrofoam box of lukewarm crab cakes and watery coleslaw. That and the balcony were my first day. That was the beginning of what was a very, very complicated 9 months. I crashed into parts of myself that I had never noticed before. I found similarities in women that I would never have noticed before. I started my time at the Desert Manor as an outsider. And even my early writing, my early reader said anthropological, like I was describing some other foreign culture, and how I needed to find my way in, my similarities, the same aches, the same longings, the same yearnings that every single other woman there had. Sort of closed the circle of learning how to be a sister that I had started in the 70s, and how to be in an environment where we are all in so many ways so different, but underneath in that human way, we're all reaching for belonging, connection, safety, visibility. And that was undoubtedly the most important thing that I learned, even as I decided that for me, I needed to leave and move back into a more independent kind of life. It was an invaluable time of learning something that I wouldn't have otherwise known.
What a beautiful way to look at it. And let me just say that there's a number of themes in your book, besides the issues of getting older and wanting to be independent and moving. There's also sexism, being Jewish, being lesbian, wanting to be independent at the same time as wanting to be cared for, the importance of community, as you've talked about. There's so much in it. And you are not just an 86-year-old woman waiting to die by any means. You seem to be thriving in your new community here in Tucson. You just released this wonderful book, and you're already working on another one. What would you advise the rest of us who are getting up there in age to do to be as interested in life and as productive as you are?
I guess what I would say that for me, I'm in a primary relationship with time. That's my most central principle organizing relationship. And I want to have that be a vibrant and alive kind of relationship. I want to use the time I have as fully and richly as my body and my mind will allow me. And one of the wonderful freedoms of being old is the ability to say no more easily. I'm so much braver now than I was as a 30 or 40 year old. I know how I love to spend my days, and that's what I do. And everything else, except of course for this recent election, has been a no. It's my time now, and I get to fill it the way I want.
You also have some really excellent articles that you've written on your website, which I highly recommend to our audience on a variety of topics. Just in closing, tell us, what is your next book going to be about, and where can readers get information about your books and you?
Okay, so my website is sandrabutler.net. Everything is there. The next book is going to be called Now What? Question mark. Notes from the Front Lines of Old Age. And it's going to be a series of essays about the different dimensions of aging as I live it.
Well, thank you so much. We're so delighted you could be with us. I really enjoy your writing and good luck on the next book.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me. I really enjoyed the conversation.
You're very welcome. And yes, we have come to the close of our show and so quickly too. But Sandy, thank you so much for coming to tell us about your amazing life and adventures and for sharing it with us through your writing. So everyone, go out and get the book, Leaving Home at 83, and get a glimpse into Sandy's personal journey or get one of her other books. And remember, if you haven't voted, get to the polls on Tuesday. Every vote counts. This is Aspen Green with Kathy Harris, and you've been listening to Broad Perspectives Radio, a program by women, about women, but for everyone. And you can hear more of our programs by going to kxci.org and looking on our Broad Perspectives Radio page. But for right now, stay tuned, because next up we have Boom Goddess Radio with Jennifer Davis Page. Enjoy your Sunday, and we'll see you next week.